Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Seattle Nice, the only podcast that tells you what's really happening in Seattle politics. I'm David Hyde with Erica C. Barnett of Publicola. Hello, Erica.
Hello. Good morning.
Also with us, political consultant Sandeep Kaushik. Hello, Sandeep.
Hey, David. How are you?
I'm excited because on today's show, the founder of the Transit Riders Union, Mayor-elect Katie Wilson, congratulations on your win.
Thank you. It's great to be here, David.
And also, thanks so much for doing this with all the waiting for ballot drops and CNN interviews and stuff. You must be kind of exhausted.
Well, it's a little much, but I will say, just to make you feel very special, that we are declining so many media opportunities right now. I probably could have spent the whole last week on national TV, but that's not my job. So, but I decided to make an exception for you all. So here I am.
Oh, we appreciate it.
And I'll just say, you did really well. We really appreciate it.
You did do well in those. I thought the CNN interview was really good, but by the way. But I almost tweeted about it, but we're special. Katie say we're special. That's great.
It doesn't take much for Sandeep.
We got a ton of questions and not very much time, so let's get right to it. And this week, Erica C. Barnett has our first question.
Katie, I wanted to start with just asking about the primary thing that you ran on, affordability. You ran on this issue. Now you have to deliver. What are the first concrete actions you plan to take on affordability for all the renters who supported you?
Great question. And, you know, you might be a little bit disappointed in some of my answers here because I'm going to probably shy away from being very specific yet about order of things or initial actions out of the gate. You know, coming out of this win, we're now in the transition process. And, you know, I'm in the process of building my team in the mayor's office, and we're going to have a pretty extensive stakeholder process over the next couple months. So this is kind of the phase of turning my platform and the things that I ran on into a plan. And so I'm not at this point going to unilaterally say, like, this is exactly what we're doing out of the gate, because we're in the process now of kind of figuring that out. So what I will say is that obviously the housing crisis and the affordability crisis more broadly are really at the core of why I ran. As you probably know, the social housing election in February was the event that kind of tipped me into this race. And so one priority for me is working with a new social housing developer to get it off to a good start, especially as revenue is going to start flowing in early next year. So that's one high priority for me. I think on the renter protections front, you know, there's a few policies in my platform, which I think are really important, regulating or banning various rental junk fees, strengthening the economic displacement relocation assistance ordinance. So I don't know how soon out of the gates we're going to try to do those things. And that's going to be a conversation with council members as well. But those are definitely priorities for me as well. And of course, there's going to be continuing discussion around land use and zoning next year as some of the decisions that are kind of left over from this year get taken up. So there's a lot on the housing affordability front that I'm going to want to at least get started on out of the gates next year. And then I think childcare is another big one. And, you know, on that front, you know, I don't think that we're going to have a solution or a policy, you know, in that first 100 days. But what we are going to do right out of the gates is start to convene stakeholders and have a real conversation about what's needed and how we get there. So that that's going to be a big priority out of the gates as well.
A kind of related issue of homelessness. The city council is putting together a budget as we speak. They're about to adopt it. And it requires your administration to keep the unified care team, which sweeps encampments. I know that you've been vocally against the policies of the Harrell administration of sweeping encampments from place to place. So how do you plan to deal with that constraint and, you know, other constraints that the city council might put on your administration?
I mean, I think that there's a lot of nuance here. And I haven't actually read the specific language of the proviso or whatever it is that they're passing to retain the unified care team. But, you know, what we're going to be trying to do is to shift as rapidly as possible to a model that's more like the Just Care program, like the encampment resolution program at the state level. And so that means that we do want to be removing encampments, but we want to be doing that by navigating people into shelter. And there is going to be a continuing role for making sure that we're keeping high priority public spaces clear. And so I think that we can probably work with, I imagine, not having read the language again, imagine that we can probably work with whatever constraints the council is putting on that those funds and begin to basically shift what we're using them for toward the model that we're trying to build. So I'm not too worried of that out of the gates, because this is going to be a process, right? And like, we're going to be moving aggressively to stand up new shelter, you know, in a variety of ways, you know, looking for sites for new tiny house villages or micro modular housing, having a conversation with our affordable housing sector about, you know, vacancies in that sector. So it's going to be a process. And I imagine that we can work with the council on that.
You know, one of the big markers you put down in the campaign is you said in a pretty rapid, short order, you want to get 4,000 unsheltered people on the streets of Seattle into some kind of shelter or housing arrangement. Can you elaborate at least a bit on that, about what the mechanism here for that is going to be? I mean, it's obviously a big, bold thought, but operationally, it seems like there's any number of different approaches that you could take to try to do that. And there are all sorts of challenges, right, associated with this sort of operationally and politically. So is this about working mostly with private sector developers? Is this about the public housing, affordable housing provider? Or what's your thinking here?
Sure. And when you say rapidly in short order, what you mean is in my first term. So
Okay. Well, haven't you said though? But before the World Cup, you want to demonstrate significant.
The Herald campaign misrepresented my platform to suggest that I was promising 4,000 new units of emergency housing or shelter in the first 6 months, which would be wild. I mean, that would be amazing, but we're not going to get there. I can say that. With certainty. So no, 4,000 units in my first term in 4 years is what I have talked about consistently on the campaign trail. And, you know, when I put that number out there early in the campaign, it was really about, and when I put it out there, I did not have a super detailed plan of how we get there, but it was more putting a marker in the sand and saying, look, we need to start talking about what we need. Because it really feels that over the last 4 years, we've kind of given up on really addressing or solving unsheltered homelessness, right? And, you know, the current administration's approach has been very focused on sweeping people around, not on expanding shelter. In fact, in putting roadblocks to shelter expanding or even just continuing to exist in some cases, such as, Tent City 4. And so really what I was trying to do is start a conversation around, like, what do we actually need if we're serious about dramatically reducing unsheltered homelessness in Seattle? And so I think, I'm obviously committed to pursuing that goal of 4,000 units. Although I really do think that in some ways a more meaningful metric is just how many people are sleeping unsheltered on our streets, right? And especially kind of comparing our progress and our rates of unsheltered homelessness to other, you know, kind of comparable cities around the country, right? And right now our rates are just off the charts. We are a national outlier according to the Brookings Institution. So it's really about how do we get those numbers down? And so I think, you know, that we're going to have a fairly aggressive timeline in the first 6 months of my term leading up to the World Cup, where there's going to be a lot of pressure to, you know, clean up, quote unquote, clean up downtown and adjacent neighborhoods for the purposes of those games. And I think that's going to be very challenging because obviously there's a lot of unsheltered homelessness. There's a lot of open air drug use in those neighborhoods. And what we really don't want to do is just be pushing people to other neighborhoods, right? Or pushing them into the shadows where it's much more dangerous for them and potentially for other people. And so it's a challenge, but it's also really an opportunity because I think there's, you know, going to be many, many stakeholders, you know, the Downtown Seattle Association, other business interests, all the everyone who's interested in having successful FIFA games is going to want to see this happen. And so I think that's going to be not to say that I plan to neglect other neighborhoods, but I do think that that's going to be a big focus in those first 6 months. And so that is going to mean standing up new shelter. And again, I think that some of that can be tiny house villages, micro modular shelters. So there's going to be a big push to site and start some of that. And then I think this idea around vacancies in the affordable housing sector, this is going to require some deep and fast conversations with affordable housing providers. But what we would be trying to do here, I think, is, you know, we have a lot of people kind of hanging out in our shelter system right now. And that includes a lot of folks who are low acuity, right, who need maybe a little bit of support, but don't need intensive wraparound services. So I think the kind of low hanging fruit is, can we move some of those people who are in the shelter system who just need a really light touch kind of case management into some of those vacancies, and in that way, potentially open up spots in the shelter system for folks who are coming off the street and who need more support. And so not to understate the complexity of this, but I do think that there's room there to do something. And so that's one thing that we're going to be pursuing out of the gates. I also think just it's kind of like all of the above, right? So we're going to have conversations with faith communities, like are there you know, vacant spaces, operators who can operate shelter, and how much can we get stood up in those first 6 months to really make a dent? And, you know, very, very aware of the fact that it's very important that when we're talking about people who have complex challenges related to substance use disorder, mental illness, that we are able to provide the kind of support that they need in whatever shelter that we're placing them into so that they're successful there.
Someone was mentioning to me, they thought this might also include, let's say, the city executing master leases with someone saying there's a lot of like apartment style private sector housing coming onto the market. Is that something that could potentially be in play? Like, let's work not just with the affordable housing community, but with the regular sort of private sector housing providers, you know, builders, landlords and stuff, about trying to figure out, can we do some of that? Can we deploy some of that towards this?
I mean, I'm not going to say definitely not to that, right? Yeah. I think I'm open to whatever's going to work here, right? But again, definitely also sensitive to the fact that we don't want to put kind of high needs folks into, you know, apartment style living with other tenants and have problems arise that are going to, you know, be problems for those other tenants. So, yeah.
Katie, as you mentioned in your prior answer, the World Cup is coming next June, and predictably Donald Trump is using this event as an excuse to attack blue cities, including this one, saying he's going to relocate matches if he considers the city unsafe. He actually mentioned Seattle, called you a, quote, very, very liberal / communist mayor, whatever that means. So it must just be really weird to be in Trump's thoughts right now, having won this election. But also, my question really is, are you a soccer fan like Zoran Mondami? And what's your response to the president?
You know, I am a soccer fan. I used to play soccer when I was little, like when I was a kid. And actually in Seattle, I never like played in on teams or anything, but I used to play like pickup soccer. So just, you know, people gather at, you know, Cali Anderson or Green Lake or the U District. And I was a big pickup soccer person.
You just won David over. You just won David.
If you said Arsenal fan like Zoran Mondami, I'd even be more excited.
And yet you lost me as a sports person.
Yeah.
Ironically.
You like sports ball, Katie? We can't vote for you anymore.
And I definitely, you know, whenever the World Cup comes around, I make a point to watch matches. And I think it's so cool that, you know, there's so many soccer fans in Seattle. And so I love like just going to a bar. You know, I remember when back when Cafe Press existed on Capitol Hill there on 12th, and I watched a couple of World Cup matches there. And no, I'm a fan. And so I'm actually really excited about the World Cup coming. And I think it's very important that we make these games successful.
And did you have a response to the president other than that?
I mean, the World Cup's going to come here. It's going to be fine. It's going to be great. I'm not too worried.
You mentioned earlier your plan for the games and talked mostly about homelessness and standing up shelter. But what about soccer fans themselves? As you know, as a soccer fan, there is a history of violence. And then on top of that, in the United States, you know, we've got our problems with gun violence. Other countries like Europe, Brazil, they've relied heavily on CCTV type cameras to monitor fans inside and outside of stadiums. I think you've been a critic of CCTV. So if we take that off the table, or should we take that off the table, and kind of what's your approach going to be?
Yeah, great question. I mean, as you know, from the statements that I've made over the campaign, I have deep concerns about the expansion of surveillance technology in this moment where it can so easily be, you know, misused and commandeered to target vulnerable communities, immigrant communities, LGBTQ plus community. And so I'm definitely a skeptic of having a massive increase in surveillance in the context of the games. And I think right now, you know, what I plan to do is, you know, I need to wade into the details, or my team needs to wade into the details of all the plans that are being made with the FIFA committee and conversations with the county and with other stakeholders. So that's going to be a conversation. And I don't have kind of like a line in the sand there, but definitely skeptical of going in that direction.
Mayor-elect Wilson, Mayor Harrell is leaving you with a budget that pays for a lot of ongoing needs with one-time funds and immediately plunges the city into a deficit. I think it's like $140 million starting in 2027. What is your plan to get out of that hole? I'm assuming the answer is not defund the police as much as a lot of people would like it to be. So where is that money going to come from?
You know, I think the first thing to say is that I'm very committed to stewarding the city budget responsibly. And, you know, we've known for years that we had this structural budget deficit coming up, right, which is related to a number of factors, including our, you know, property tax lid, related to high rates of inflation coming out of the pandemic. And, you know, I think, and I'm also very committed to making sure that we're using the revenue that we have as effectively as possible. And so that means that I might make some hard budget decisions that not everyone likes, right? Like, I'm not averse to ending spending on programs that were maybe well-intentioned when they were first put into place, but are no longer doing what they were intended to do or are not the best use of our funds. And so I'm, you know, looking forward to having my team dig in more detail into the city budget and finding places where we can change how we're spending funds so that we're delivering for the people of Seattle as much as possible. So that's all a way of saying that we may deal and we may have to deal with part of this deficit by cutting things. And I, you know, you mentioned public safety and the police, right? I'm not planning to defund the police, but I do think that within SPD, within our public safety spending, there is probably a lot. I know that there is a lot that we can do to get better outcomes with the money that we have. So I'm going to be spending a lot of time focusing on that. But yes, this problem of one-time spending that you point out is a real one, where there's been a lot of new things funded, many of which are very good and important, right? I mean, I think that all the food security spending is a really good example of this, where we're in a moment where a lot of people are experiencing food insecurity and are relying on city-funded programs. And Mayor Harrell has, you know, funded some new ones, which are good. Expansion of FreshBooks, you know, Lake City Farmers Market in the context of the Fred Meyer closing up there. And that's funding that we probably want to continue, right? But it's only in there as one-time funds. So some of this can be solved again by finding other areas which are maybe not as high a priority where we can shift over money. And then also, obviously, I'm very much on board with seeking new progressive revenue. And so I think that coming into my first budget cycle next fall, you may see some proposals coming out of my office for new revenue. I think that a local capital gains tax is one I've talked about that's probably low-hanging fruit in terms of the city's clear authority to do that and relatively straightforward implementation, assuming that we can get the cooperation of the state, because we'd be relying on the state to collect that money for us. And then there are some other options that we're going to have to work on developing.
I mean, it seems to me, as you're saying that, capital gains tax is not going to be that much money ultimately if it passes. I think that was one of the criticisms of Kathy Moore and Alexis Mercedes Rink's proposal last year. And you know, as we mentioned, I mean, you're constrained. You can't cut the unified care team. There's a proviso on police spending in the budget too. I think it's like $26 million that you're not allowed to touch. So I'm wondering, you know, what graffiti as well. They put a proviso on $4 million saying you can't take away from the graffiti removal teams. So where do you see potential for cuts? I know it's early, but I mean, are you looking at like CCTV cameras, or, you know, what sort of programs do you think were well-intended but no longer working or don't work, as you mentioned?
Well, I think you're not going to love this, but I'm going to punt on that question and say, ask me after I've had some conversations with my budget director.
Who's your budget director?
No comment.
I think I know. There are all sorts of words out there. I'm not going to throw out names.
Sandeep, I have to say that during the campaign, and then certainly since the campaign, I've learned a lot about how rumors work.
I've heard some
wild stories about things that I am planning to do, where people that I'm planning to hire. So don't believe everything you hear.
Totally understood. No, believe me. Last night I heard you were hiring someone in a senior role who was like, I have no interest in going to the city. You know, there's all sorts. You're absolutely right. There's all sorts of crazy stuff out there, and it's a whole parlor game. We're all like kind of trying to read the tea leaves and speculating about who the hell is Katie Wilson going to bring in with her to this administration? What's going to happen? So anyway, we'll leave that aside. We know you have announcements coming up on that. Last time we talked, Katie, Madam Mayor, Mayor-elect, you told me that you had two big priority areas that you were going to focus on coming out of the gate. We've talked about homelessness. You said you some of the moves you want to make there in terms of getting people sheltered. The other area you cited to me was public safety. And so obviously you're talking a little bit about taking a hard look at the police budget and how the money's getting spent. But anything else you can tell us on the public safety front about things? That's a big category. So is there stuff you want to take on there?
Hey, Seattle Nice listeners. Seattle politics got you low? Well, get high with Uncle Ike's. Pissed at the mayor? Relax with a dollar joint. Pop a tire in a pothole? Eat a $2 gummy and chill. Whether you need something to pump you up for Saturday's protest or a mellow strain for your next sit-in, Ike's is your best friend. Now is the time to roll up, Seattle. Download the Ike's app today or head on over to Ike's.com. That's Ike's.com.
That is a big category. And I think I'm going to probably mostly keep my mouth shut and have a lot more to say when I'm ready. I mean, you know that I am very committed to the expansion and success of the CARE team and, you know, we now have a new police contract that in some ways expands the team and their kind of authority, but in other ways continues to restrict their authority more than I think it should be restricted. But I'm going to be working to make sure that they are as successful as possible and able to respond to as many crisis calls as possible. So that's one area of focus for me. And then there's a whole kind of collection of issues around kind of public disorder and public safety in key neighborhoods, downtown, Little Saigon, the U District, et cetera, where we really need to work on and improve on some really good models, right, that have already been started, right? So I think the U District partnership is a really great organization and the kind of model they're pioneering there with case conferencing and really focusing on individuals and figuring out what those individuals need who are kind of disproportionately involved in some of the chaos in that neighborhood, right? So I think that we can build on some of the good work that's already been being done in some of these neighborhoods and expand that to more neighborhoods. And so that's really a collaboration between our police department and various nonprofits and other stakeholders in those neighborhoods. So that's something that I'm very keen to focus on. This is the Neighborhood Impact Framework, I believe, is the acronym that's being used. So that's something that will be a high priority for me as well.
The word socialist gets thrown around a lot these days. We had a Trotskyist, a revolutionary Marxist on the Seattle City Council for many years, but the media always just called Chama Sawant a socialist as if she was kind of like Bernie Sanders, when in fact she wanted to overthrow capitalism. You're also being called a socialist. You've talked about things like universal childcare. And my question is, I don't really understand how that's different from like New Deal liberalism, where FDR expands the state to include things like Social Security, but FDR was not anti-capitalist. He actually saves capitalism, you know, through the New Deal. So do you want to save capitalism like FDR, or what kind of socialist are you? I guess is my question.
You know, David, the world wants to know.
We do. We do want to know.
And, you know, part of the reason I'm a socialist, comfortable being called a socialist, didn't make that a big part of my campaign, partly because you're right. The things that I'm campaigning on, the things that I plan to pursue as mayor in the next 4 years are really, you know, FDR would be like, that's kid stuff, right? Like this is we've backslid so far from, kind of mid 20th century that the stuff that we're trying to do today looks pretty paltry. So yeah, there's not a lot of space, I think, between my goals as mayor in the next 4 years and what a garden variety, you know, progressive might be trying to accomplish. I mean, I will say that I think, well, okay, so a couple of things. So first of all, one thing that might outlook might influence the way that I govern is that I do believe very strongly in the importance of movement building, organizing outside City Hall to accomplish big things. And so that means that I'm going to be governing in a way that tries to create space for that kind of organizing and for people to come together, discover their common interests, and push the city to go further than we otherwise would be able to go. And I'll say, I mean, this kind of relates to what I said at the beginning about like, we've been deluged with media requests, right? National, even international media requests. And I'll say that, like, okay, it's a little bit tempting for me. So I don't really care about personally having like a national or international like personality profile, or whatever. So it's not like, oh, I want to be out there. But I am someone who thinks a lot, who has lots of ideas, who wants to talk about my ideas. You know, I was a columnist for years. I'm a reflective person. And so, you know, the idea of having a national or international platform to talk about my thoughts about history and political economy and the future of humanity is a little bit tempting, I will admit. however, it's not what I was elected for. And I think that would be an abuse of the office to which I was elected. So all of that is to say that I know there's a lot of speculation. Am I the kind of socialist who just thinks that the U.S. should be more like Denmark, or do I think that we should abolish markets and everything should be run by the state? I'm not going to get into that right now. Maybe there will be an opportunity in the years ahead where it feels appropriate to expound on my thoughts, but it's not really relevant to my tenure as mayor, and I'm really going to be focused on making life better in this city, and therefore, I'm not going to be out there using my office as a soapbox.
Let me ask then, what's the role of the market in your concept of socialism here in Seattle in the next 4 years? Like, we need more market rate housing. So a lot of people think we need to change our zoning rules and cut red tape. Similarly, we need grocery stores in more places. So some people say, well, we should make it easier to build more new stores in those places by maybe offering tax incentives to site in places that might be less profitable. So what are your thoughts on that as a small s independent socialist?
I mean, I think you're going to find that I'm very pragmatic when it comes to, you know, what we need to do in the next 4 years to make life better. And so, I mean, I think housing is a great example, right? So I'm very much on the record supporting zoning and land use laws that make it easier for the private market to build more housing, especially kind of missing middle housing around the city, right? So I'm not, you know, just because I'm a socialist doesn't mean that I think that the market should stop building housing. Actually, we need it to build a lot more. Yeah. And I think with grocery stores, I'm cautiously interested in exploring this idea of a public option grocery store. There's a number of ways that that could look, right? That could look like a totally publicly operated grocery stores like we have at military bases around the country. Now, that's kind of a heavy lift, right? Because the government, our local government does not know how to run a grocery store right now. And so probably if we were to move in that direction, a more practical model would be some kind of public-private partnership where, for example, the city might own the land and then contract with a private grocery operator. And here in Seattle, we're kind of unique in having some really great kind of local chains that have good working relationships with UFCW 3000, the labor union that represents grocery workers. So there's, there's Town and Country Markets, there's Met Market, there's PCC, right? So you could potentially see the city contracting with one of those kind of like local chains. And then, you know, there's a lot of room there for figuring out how it operates and whether, you know, certain staple goods maybe are lower price. And there's a lot of potential there, I think. So again, I think you're going to find that in practice, I'm going to be very pragmatic. And mostly I want to do stuff that works and get results. And I think like I will say that as a socialist, I think that the most important thing that people like me coming from the progressive left can do coming into executive offices right now is to show that we can govern and show that we can get results and that we're not just kind of ideological. So that's what I'm going to be focusing on.
There's been a lot of speculation about whether you plan to replace the police chief, Sean Barnes. And so I just want to ask you straight up, do you believe that Barnes is the right police chief for the city right now? And why or why not?
I'm going to respectfully decline that question at the moment. It's a very sensitive question. And I am looking forward to meeting with Sean Barnes in the near future and having conversations with a lot of people about how things are going at the police department. I guess what I will say, and this is not just about the police chief, but this is about department leadership across the city, because there's, you know, the question when a new mayor comes into office of potentially, you know, appointing new department heads. For me, this is really not a political question, right? I don't care what department head supported Harrell or campaigned actively for him, right? For me, this is really about getting the best people in place to lead those departments. And obviously there needs to be a certain amount of kind of vision alignment for someone to want to work with me. But beyond that, the thing that I really care about is that they're a good leader, that their employees respect them and can work for them. And so we're going to have a process where my team meets with all of the department heads and gets their input, you know, sees how they think things are going. And we're going to hear from a lot of different directions before making decisions about potential new appointments. And I believe that to the extent that we can have continuity, that's good. So I'm hoping to retain department leadership, folks who are dedicated public servants doing a great job. I'm sure there will be some turnover. So that applies across the board, including our police department.
I mean, respectfully, I know it's a sensitive question, but I understand why you wouldn't want to answer it. And I did not really expect you to say anything different, Katie, but it is a matter of huge public concern, more than like the Department of Neighborhoods or, you know, some of the
Absolutely.
Lower profile departments.
Absolutely.
So I imagine that's going to be something that you are considering, maybe not more heavily, but I know it's been a topic of a lot of discussion.
As it should be. I mean, I think that the police department and police department leadership is among the most important decisions that I will be making. And for that reason, I am doing my due diligence and I want to make absolutely sure that I'm making the best decision for our city.
So as a follow-up, there's been a lot of concern about the police contracts that keep passing. There's a contract that passed this year that gives police huge new raises without a lot of accountability improvements. So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about some specific accountability improvements you hope to pass by the end of your term and your plan to accomplish them, given that SPOG, the police union, is pretty intransigent and, I've heard not a fan of yours.
Well, that remains to be seen too. I'm looking forward to meeting with Mike Solon soon, I'm sure. I think I might punt on this one too, Erica. There's a lot of wheels turning on the public safety front. And so I'm going to stop short of putting out a specific platform for changes that I want to make in my first term. That'll come in good time.
Katie, I've already sort of labeling you, okay, Seattle's new socialist mayor. Are you Seattle's urbanist mayor right now? And if so, what does that mean to you?
I mean, yeah, I think I probably am Seattle's urbanist mayor. I think it would be hard for me to reject that label. I've been a columnist for The Urbanist in the past. Certainly a lot of my policy positions, I think, would rightly be called urbanist. And I mean, for me, that means that Seattle's a big city and I love living in a big city and I want Seattle to become a bigger and better city where it's possible, for example, for someone to live like I do right now, right? Which is raising a child in an apartment. And that means that the city kind of becomes your backyard or your living room. And I think that urban lifestyle is something that we need to promote, and we need to make it possible for more and more people to live in this city without owning a car. And that's not just for the sake of the people who don't own cars, right? I mean, as more people continue to move to Seattle and our region, we just have limited space, and it's just not possible to keep adding cars to the road. And so we really, really need to, we deserve a world-class mass transit system. I think that's just a very, very important thing to be working towards for all kinds of reasons. And we need great public space. We need more car-free public space. We need, you know, great parks, great playgrounds, all of those urban amenities. And so I am going to be very focused on making sure that Seattle is a great big city that can continue to grow in that direction.
I'm going to jump to some listener questions. A Patreon donor and listener, Lab Friend. So first name Lab, last name Friend, I guess. And this is somebody who I think works for the city and actually voted for you. The question is, what do you think the city's doing well, and what existing programs or offices do you want to grow in your first year?
Oh, golly, that's a good question.
And Lab Friend is hoping it's wherever they work, I guess.
Yeah, I think that a ton of things are working well, especially at like a small scale where like departments and people in departments are doing really great work. I think just to give one little example, I think the Seattle Restore program is really cool, and I think could also use some improvement. I mean, I've talked to a lot of folks who've participated in that program, and I think we can make improvements. But this idea of activating vacant storefronts by giving a boost to entrepreneurs who are starting businesses, you know, pop-ups, I think that's great, and would love to build on that and some of the other programs that the city already has in place helping small businesses. That's going to be a big priority for me in my first year, is continuing to talk with small business owners around the city, really understand the challenges that they're facing, and come up with kind of a suite of policy and program ideas that can make it easier to start and operate and expand a small business in Seattle. So I think the city's already doing some really good work on that front, and I'm eager to build on that. I think that, I mean, as a community organizer, the Department of Neighborhoods has a huge amount of potential, right? That's one department that has, you know, is supposed to be out there talking to people in the neighborhoods. And so I'm really excited to work with that department from the mayor's office to figure out how it can be as effective as possible in, you know, gathering information, building relationships in neighborhoods across the city with all kinds of stakeholders and communities, and just be kind of the city's eyes and ears, and make sure that we are being communicative and responsive with residents around the city. So I think that that's really exciting to me too.
One more quick one from Seattle Patreon donor Ted Barker. Seattle hasn't reelected a mayor in 20 years. Do you hope to break the streak? If so, what's your approach to maintaining and potentially expanding your coalition? And I would just add, it was a tight race. So this is one of those kind of, what's your message to the nearly 50% of actual voters who didn't vote for you?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. I mean, I think, yeah, this is a great question. So yes, absolutely. I hope to break that streak because I think it's not good. Despite the fact that I challenged an incumbent, I think it's not great to just have one term mayor after one term mayor. So I do hope to govern in a way that leads to me being able to serve another term. But I think what I'll say about that is that one of the things that I understand about Mayor Harrell is that I do believe that he stepped into office wanting very much to be a two-term mayor. And I think that his approach and his, you know, consultant's approach to governing over the last 4 years has been to really focus on building that coalition of interests that could get him reelected for a second term. So for example, you know, most of the labor movement did not support him 4 years ago, but I think he did a good job over the last 4 years of bringing them into the fold and doing some things that they wanted him to do in a way that meant that when he came out of the gates this year, most of the labor unions were kind of expecting to support his reelection. So that is to say that kind of model, it's a kind of a transactional style of politics where he was trying to kind of gather together those interests that could get him reelected. I don't think that's a good way to govern, right? Because that's kind of like, you're doing favors for people, you're building those relationships, but that's not a vision for the city. you know, that's not a vision of delivering for the people of Seattle. And so for me, I do want a second term, but I do not want to govern to win a second term, right? I want to govern to like do the right thing. And if I'm lucky, that means that I will get a second term. And, you know, there's all kinds of things out of my control. Like if we have a deep recession in the next 4 years, right? Like I can't control that. Like that's the kind of thing that can really make it hard to win again, even though it's not your fault, right? So like whatever. But the priority for me is going to be good governance and getting results. And that's going to mean that I do some unpopular things. I think one problem with that transactional style of politics that I think our current mayor practices is that it gives you a bias against doing bold things because you don't want to piss off this or that interest, which could then be angry at you. So I'm not afraid of doing that. And I'm probably going to do some things that piss people off because I believe that they're the right thing to do for the city.
Quick, another listener question. This is from Blue Sky. And just to set it up, that you participated in the Race the Late L numeral 8 event, where transit advocates walked along the route of the notoriously late 8 bus. And not long after that, Bruce Harrell cut funding for a bus lane that was planned there. Brandon on Blue Sky, and this might have come from other folks as well, wants to know what you're going to do to fix the 8.
Bus lanes.
So you're going to go in and put that bus lane back?
Yeah. So I think that in that case and in some other cases around the city, right, I think bus lanes are a really key part of how we make our transit system efficient and make the best use of all of the public money that we're spending on our transit system. So I want to put bus lanes on Denny. Now, I think that lanes is probably the more accurate. So it's like business, I should know this, but there are some complicated questions around making sure that there's still access to businesses and et cetera. So we're going to do this carefully, but yeah, I think that bus lanes is the answer.
Okay, and then one more quick listener question that came up several times on Blue Sky. Are you going to restore Denny Blaine Park to being fully open, accessible, and uncensored for queer people, nudists, and anyone else who wants to use it? And one person who asked that question is Smook on Blue Sky. a lot of people want to know.
Yes, I do want to do this. I want to work closely with friends of Denny Blaine and others. I mean, there are some like legitimate issues that need to be solved to make sure that, you know, the park is good for all the folks using it. But yeah, I would like to restore the park to its historic use as a queer nude beach.
So let me jump in and ask bring a listener question that I think I wouldn't phrase this question this way, but I'm gonna read the question as it was phrased by David Smith, who sent this in. So given Sarah Nelson's departure after the election, how much cooperation should we expect between the mayor's office and the city council? And then David cites, you know, more progressive funding taxation measures, moderating what David calls some of the conservative excesses of the last few years. But nonetheless, that question about how do you see your relationship with the council going here? We've got a very mixed council right now, right? So how's that going to work?
Yeah, no, I'm really excited about working with all the council members. I've, you know, started meeting with each of them one-on-one. We'll be continuing to do that over the next couple of weeks. And I think it's so important that the mayor's office has a good working relationship with every single council office, even if we don't agree on everything. And I really think that there are so many things that regardless of, you know, ideology or whatever that we all like really want to see. And I think progress on unsheltered homelessness and progress in public safety are absolutely two of those things. So I'm going to be working really hard to make sure that, again, even though we might not agree on everything, we can work together on everything possible. And I do think that the new council members coming in, you're very aligned with my vision, I believe. And so very excited about that. And I think that that really shows where voters are at, where you know, Seattle is at in terms of wanting us to move forward with a lot of progressive priorities. And so definitely going to be looking for opportunities to advance progressive legislation, whether that's around revenue or anything else. And I'm optimistic, right? I really think that I think that we can assemble strong majorities for a lot of good things.
Katie Wilson, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks, Katie.
Madam Mayor-elect, Katie Wilson.
That's it for another edition of Seattle Nice. She's Erica C. Barnett. He's Sandeep Kaushik. I'm David Hyde. Our editor is Quinn Waller. And thanks, everyone, so much for listening.